It is Tuesday, April 1st, and what is going on planet Earth is no joke. Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Now, our daily podcast is focused on COVID-19, and we're so thankful that KUNM is giving us some time on its airwaves. We'll be here all week long at 8 p.m., so tune in. While cities and towns everywhere are taking action to prevent the spread of the coronavirus and treat the people who have contracted the disease, it serves us not to forget about the situation on tribal lands. In today's episode, we talk with journalists, tribal leaders, organizers, and state officials about the status and plan for tribal lands as they fight the pandemic. We also hear from folks who live in the Navajo Nation, like Brad Charles out near Shiprock.
We've been having checkpoints every night. We had a curfew now, which we've never had, and it started on Monday, and the curfew runs from 8 p.m. to 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's later on in the hour. We still want to hear from you. If you'd like to share your experience, we've got a hotline and we'll play your messages on our future shows. Call 505-218-7084. Share anything with us. How are you social distancing? How are you coping? What's going on out by where you live? Or if you simply just want to share your concerns. That number again, 505-218-7084. Or you can email us at yournmgov@gmail.com. What is happening in tribal lands? Today, we're learning about the issues and needs that tribes are facing, from limited healthcare supplies to potential food shortages. Tribal leaders are working to protect people, all while dealing with a lack of resources. We talk with the people who have identified the problems and are working to create solutions. That's coming up later, but first, executive producer Marisa DeMarco is here with a quick rundown of what we know today, Wednesday, April 1st, as of 5 p.m.
Doctors in China are saying a malaria drug did help a small number of people with mild cases of coronavirus get better faster, and it made the cases less likely to become severe. A U.S. doctor told the New York Times that healthcare workers around the country are already using the drug. And the early study reinforces that decision. The federal government doesn't have any more masks, gowns, or gloves for hospital workers, according to the Washington Post. The national stockpile is gone, except for some equipment that is reserved for federal first responders. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said the feds are kind of the only hope for PPE for the states, and he doesn't understand why there isn't more of it. He pointed out that President Trump, under the Defense Production Act, could order companies to start producing PPE. Trump also said today that he will not issue a national order for people to stay at home, though Florida did finally get on board today. Early data is showing the stay-at-home orders do work and have helped flatten the curve in California and Washington. The earlier they happen, the better, researchers say. The infection rate and death rate in the United States is higher than everywhere else in the world. There are 200,000 confirmed cases nationwide and 4,000 deaths. Around the state, there are 48 new cases today, bringing the total to 363. There have been six deaths, one of them Tuesday. She was in her 90s. In the Navajo Nation, there have been 174 people diagnosed and seven deaths, according to the Navajo Department of Health. Projections are showing that here in New Mexico, we will see the peak of the pandemic around April 25th, according to KRQE. That's if social distancing goes well. For your New Mexico government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
We're going to start the show off by talking with Antonia Gonzalez. She's an anchor for National Native News and a New Mexico PBS contributor. Antonia, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So how are you feeling? How's everyone in your family and friends? Is everyone feeling okay?
Yeah, we're dealing with this like a lot of other households with kids doing online learning. And, you know, luckily we're here in the city, so we have access to high-speed internet, and we're just carrying along, and everybody's doing well on this end. Thanks for asking.
That's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you, how hard are Native communities being hit by the virus?
So a number of Native communities in the Southwest are dealing with COVID-19, the Navajo Nation probably being one of the hardest hit tribes in the Southwest and pretty much across the country. As of Tuesday night, they were confirming more than 170 positive cases and, unfortunately, sadly, seven deaths related to COVID-19. And so the Navajo leaders took the news of COVID-19 serious from the start and started preparing and planning weeks ago and have been doing so around the clock. And so the preparations are continuing, and including when it comes to education. As you know, on Friday, the governor of New Mexico and education officials here in the state announced that New Mexico schools would be closed for the rest of the academic school year. And Secretary Lynn Trujillo with the Indian Affairs Department was among those cabinet leaders talking about how this was going to impact schools. Tribal schools in the state are unique, as some are tribally run, some are federally run, and then, of course, Native students across New Mexico also go to public schools. And so there's a variety of ways Native students are receiving education. And what we're hearing from the Indian Affairs Department is that the tribally run and the federally run schools are also following these closures here in the state of New Mexico. And I think one of the biggest challenges is internet access, of course, especially in rural areas. And then we also have an issue with supplies or even computers at home. And so this is posing a lot of different challenges to tribal leaders who are working with the Indian Affairs Department to address some of those needs. And Secretary Lynn Trujillo said that she's holding weekly calls with tribal leaders across the state and discussing some of these challenges and looking at how can some supplies get delivered, or how can students get access to the internet, and also food. A lot of students often rely on their meals from school, and how is that going to have an impact? And also healthy meals, especially as we're looking at some of these places not even having access to some of the much needed supplies, as we're seeing people going to the grocery store and buying a lot of supplies out.
Question for you. Sometimes, you know, living remotely, not having running water in their house and that kind of thing, if people get sick and they don't have easy access to basic utilities or good communication, what can they do? What solutions are people coming up with as this presses on?
You know, a lot of tribal communities rely on each other, rely on the neighbors, rely on the families to look out for one another. And that's still what is being advised during this time. But to use caution, of course, we're hearing of different leaders and different outreach efforts to go and check on elders and other people in the community who maybe lack access to this communication, or, you know, don't have access to healthcare, and to make sure that you are checking on your neighbors, but to use utmost precautions, especially because of how this virus is being community spread. So that is definitely a huge concern. And of course, for those who do have internet, keeping together, socializing by different means of getting on the computer or trying to do FaceTime or maybe even just phone calls. And we see people, in Indian country taking, using those various methods as well when it comes to keeping in touch and checking on neighbors and elders and family members.
So what areas of the state are in the greatest need? Are there needs similar to what we've been hearing in other parts of the country?
I think you'll hear a variety of needs. Secretary Trujillo was saying on Friday during a press conference that tribes across New Mexico are worried about protective gear for, their communities in dealing with the coronavirus. Also, again, just the lack of access to the internet, but also the lack of infrastructure with, libraries being key places where people are used to going for a variety of things. Education, number one, but also there's other community recreation centers and other community gathering points that tribes that are really impacting the way of life to be self-isolated. That's not a traditional Native value in many tribal communities, and so it's something that tribes are adapting to. But also what we're hearing from people across Indian country is also still that resilience of trying to stay positive and trying to move forward through this and using culture, tradition, and language to address the many needs. It's also interesting with kids being home is we're hearing from some parents saying this is a great time to teach those culture, tradition, values to your children, but also activities. Here in New Mexico, the NB3 Foundation, the Notabegay III, the famous golfer who's Native American, his group works on diabetes and obesity prevention. And I've seen a lot of, social media posts of getting out and working out, whether it's in your backyard or in your house. And we're also seeing that with some other, you know, Native folks who are in fitness here in New Mexico sharing yoga or sharing, you know, cardio or different weight exercises that folks could do from their home. I think one area that I'm not hearing a ton of from people talking about, I think people are just really focusing, you know, on trying to figure out how they're going to do distance learning for Native students, but also taking a look at young children and how that's really important in tribal communities because it helps kickstart a lot of these students who, young kids who are learning how to socialize, and how's that going to look, and how are younger kids being impacted? Also, just talking about trauma and how to talk to your children about trauma and what are some of the things that they're going to be fearful of when they return to school. We're even seeing some of people in public, maybe when they're coughing or when there's people wearing masks and gloves and that kind of sometimes stigma, but also trauma. What's that going to be like when children return to school? And also just, you know, seniors. We're hearing a lot about seniors who were preparing for their senior year for celebrations and prom and graduation. And it's been hard for people across the country and including in Indian country when it comes to talking about seniors.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to deal with in the aftermath of all of this. First, we have to get through it, and we can only get through it together. Antonia Gonzalez with the National Native News and a New Mexico PBS contributor, thank you so much for being with me today. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham told President Trump in a phone call that she was worried COVID could, quote, wipe out some tribal nations, and talked about sudden spikes in the number of cases in the Navajo Nation. She also said in the phone call that they were seeing higher rates of hospitalizations of Native people, younger folks in the hospitals, and more people that had to go straight to a ventilator. Yesterday, she was asked about that comment during her virtual news conference. Here's the governor.
Well, specifically, my biggest concern about our sovereign nations is that many of them, right, if not all, are located in areas where it's very rural and frontier. And specifically, when you look to some of the chapters, right, they're not, that's a body of government for the Navajo Nation. They're in areas where there are no resources, right? There are no grocery stores. There are no health care services. So you have to leave those environments in order to have access to anything. Or if you've got populations who have very specific rates of chronic disease and they have long distances to travel for, say, things such as dialysis, this creates a different set of risks. So my comments to the White House were meant to make sure that they don't forget that this is a state that's got considerable challenges. And as a result, we expect them to give us the kind of focus. I think that's in large part how they made a decision on a phone call to grant us the field hospital, even though they don't see New Mexico yet as a priority.
We've got Antonia's interview with Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez here for you, courtesy of our partner, New Mexico PBS.
Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, thank you for connecting with New Mexico PBS this afternoon.
Hey, Antonia. Thank you for having us on the show.
And the Navajo Nation is one of the largest tribes in the United States with the largest land base. You and your administration took COVID-19 information and news serious from the start. As of Thursday, the nation had reported 69 positive cases. What is the biggest challenge right now facing the Navajo Nation?
Well, we have, Antonia, we have a shelter-in-place order throughout the Navajo Nation, so we're wanting all our Navajo members and residents to, you know, stay at home. I think that's the safest place to be here, and also to minimize the spread of COVID-19 coronavirus throughout our Navajo Nation. So right now, the biggest concern that we have is getting the needed equipment to our first responders. And I guess that's like that throughout the country. You know, it's just not Navajo Nation. You know, we're trying to get personal protection equipment to those that are giving out food and necessities to our most vulnerable, which are our elders and our those that are being cared for by healthcare providers. So we're just trying to do with what we have. And we did get some equipment from the Strategic National Stockpile, that's coming into the States and coming up into the Navajo Nation. So we appreciate that resource coming in. But, you know, some of the resources from the federal government has yet to reach Indian country and has yet to reach the Navajo Nation. And, you know, that first allocation of dollars, that $8.3 billion, and out of that 8.3, $40 million went to the tribes. To this day, Antonia, we haven't get one penny of that. And there's just so many hurdles. And I just saw the CDC, that $40 million, the federal government is saying is you got to apply for it as a grant. And we have to do all the paperwork. And the grant is the application deadline is in the next week or 2 weeks. I don't quite remember. But, you know, we have to wait for that deadline before we even get any of those dollars to the Navajo Nation. And but yet that first $8.3 billion, a lot of that money has gone to states directly. And yet tribes have to apply for that. And as a pass through the CDC or pass through the states. And, you know, it's frustrating. But, you know, I just want everyone to understand that there's no difference here. Even the funds that we get from various federal allocations have to go through the states or the programs and departments of the federal government before it comes to tribes. So that needs to be reevaluated. And I'm hopeful that our congressional leaders are listening and those changes need to happen. We need those resources immediately into Indian country and here on the Navajo Nation.
And as you're urging Navajo citizens to stay home to limit the spread of COVID-19, there's a lot of people in the public who are interested in even helping the Navajo Nation. You've closed all the tourist areas and you've asked tourists and people who are not, you know, from the Navajo Nation just to not visit at this time. What's your message to the public outside of Navajo land?
Well, you know, we appreciate all our visitors every year coming to the Navajo Nation to, you know, experience Navajo people's culture, tradition, and their way of life. And you know, throughout the world today, right now, and throughout the country, it's really no time to be traveling. And we're just asking our visitors to please respect the sovereignty of our Navajo Nation, you know, and we closed all our tourism destinations or point of interest throughout our nation. And right now there's an emergency clear across the country, and to limit the spread of COVID-19 everywhere, the best place to be is to be at home. And we just ask our visitors to, you know, respect our laws and our authorities here on the Navajo Nation. So, you know, we say that with all due respect. And of course, once the virus goes away, and I'm sure there'll be a vaccine sometime soon, tourists and our visitors, those doors will be once again open to experience the Navajo Nation.
President Nez, Navajo people, like other tribal people, indigenous people across the country, around the world, are resilient people. You know, 150-year treaty was commemorated for the Navajo Nation, and you talked a little bit about disease and survival. Just what's your message to indigenous people, indigenous nations, as they're dealing with COVID-19, words of encouragement, and the resilience of indigenous communities?
Yeah, and thank you for that, Antonia. And you did do an interview when we commemorated the 150th anniversary of our long walk. You know, we've been telling our Navajo citizens out there, we are resilient and we'll overcome this, just as we overcame some tough times in our history as Navajo people and all the tribes throughout the country. And let me just say, you know, in our language, and I said this many times in many interviews, that in our Navajo language, you know, and translated into English, that means we're five-fingered beings. And, you know, Antonia, if you put your hand up, you have five fingers. And everyone throughout the world, mankind, you know, we're all in this together. And we will work together and we will overcome this virus that's taking over our lands, and we'll still be here. We'll still be here 150 plus years from now, and we'll use this as a story of how we worked together, how we overcame this virus and made us stronger from that. So for all of us that are on the front lines, you know, Antonia, Navajo Nation Vice President Myron Leiser and myself, you know, we're one of those leaders that are hands-on, and we take the precautions seriously. Don't get me wrong, wearing our PPEs out there, but we just want to let our Navajo people know that we care for them, we love them, and that's why we're out there doing roadblocks and telling everybody to go home. Maybe if they see their president and vice president on the side of the road, letting them know that they need to be at home, maybe they'll listen a little bit more to the recommendations and the requirements that are out there throughout the country and throughout our Navajo Nation. So we're all in this together. We'll overcome together, and we'll become stronger from this event that's taking place.
Thank you, Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
This is your New Mexico government. KUNM's got us on the air every night this week, covering different aspects of how COVID-19 is affecting our community. National Native News anchor and New Mexico PBS correspondent Antonia Gonzalez also spoke with Stacy Boland, CEO of the National Indian Health Board. One more thanks to PBS for sharing that with us. Here it is.
We want to bring in Stacy Boland with the National Indian Health Board. Stacy, your organization has been involved in national discussions about tribes and COVID-19 and also conducted a recent survey. What are you hearing is most important for American Indians and Alaska Natives?
Right now, we've heard that there is very little access to personal protective equipment. The N95 masks, gowns, gloves, ventilators for treatment. And that's one of the top things that we're hearing.
And can you talk a little bit about how rural American Indian and Alaska Native communities are being hit?
You mean in terms of the incidence and prevalence of the disease?
Just as far as what we know when it comes to health disparities among tribes in the country and looking at different diseases in the past, what may happen to tribes that don't have access to hospitals or have limited healthcare services?
Well, in this particular disease process, what is really frightening is that the top indicators for vulnerabilities to COVID-19 also happen to be the top health disparities of Indian country. For example, the presence of diabetes is always listed as number one for a vulnerability for COVID-19. And then respiratory illness, we understand, you know, of course, that tuberculosis rates in Indian country are hundreds of times higher than anywhere else in America. Cardiovascular disease, hypertension, all of the things that Indian country has as our top health disparities. And when you align that with the exact vulnerabilities that COVID-19 creates, it's really a deadly combination for the tribes. Then you have a health system that is grossly under-resourced and always has been. And you have a situation where the hospitals in Indian country are 40 years old and older, where mainstream hospitals are not older than 10 years old. Only half of the IHS tribal facilities have surgical capabilities and very little intensive care capabilities. So add on to that the requirement that social distancing occur. How do you socially distance when you have multi-generational families living together in a home? Because that's traditionally what we will do. Social distancing is not a native value, but it's something we have to adapt to for the time being until this is behind us. Something else specific to Indian country is when you hear CDC and others repeatedly say, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Well, what if you don't have access to clean, safe running water or sanitation facilities, as is true among some of the tribes in New Mexico, certainly in Alaska, Montana, other places in the country. So yes, Indian country does specifically have some very strong vulnerabilities that create almost a perfect storm for this to be devastating to our people.
So do tribes feel like they are prepared for COVID-19?
No, I don't think so. In the conversations that we have with tribes, the National Indian Health Board serves all 574 federally recognized tribes in the United States, both American Indian and Alaska Native. And we are in constant communication with people all over the country in Indian country. Tribes do not feel prepared. Tribes are being very creative with how they'd like to be prepared. We just had a board call, and one of our members from Lummi Nation, who they have just found their 10th person suffering from COVID-19, they want to build an emergency medical facility you know, they need help to do that.
And can you talk a little bit about the push by tribal leaders, health advocates, national Native organizations to keep pressure on the Trump administration and Congress to make sure that discussions about COVID-19 and funding include tribal nations?
Yes. Well, we've been very strongly advocating around the clock for the last 3 weeks since this became an apparent crisis waiting to happen. And frankly, waiting hours, not days, to happen by the time we really realized how bad this would be. We started advocating almost immediately around the 1st of March to have Congress pay attention to the special and unique circumstances of tribes and to remind Congress of the trust responsibility that exists between the federal government and tribal nations. And, you know, we have a lot of friends in Congress. Many of them are in New Mexico. We had several victories in these last three supplemental bills. One that is pending now would bring $1.032 billion into the Indian health system. There would be another $125 million set aside for tribes in the CDC and $15 million in the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration and the Health Resources and Services Administration. So there are substantial investments just in those columns alone for Indian country. That's the bill that's pending right now. In the first bill, the tribes had a $40 million set aside, which we fought for very hard, our board fought for very hard, and we won. And that came into the CDC. We know from working with the CDC for several years that they really do not have the level of cultural understanding, nor the financial mechanisms to get money out to the tribes swiftly like the Indian Health Service does. We held an all tribes call. We had hundreds of tribes participate on the call and asked the tribes, how do you want this to work? How do you want to receive this money? And uniformly, the tribes wanted the funding to come through the Indian Health Service through an interagency agreement. Contracting, compacting, the Indian Self-Determination Act, through the annual funding agreements at the Indian Health Service, that money would already be in the tribes' hands. Well, the tribes still don't have that funding. Thankfully, Tom Cole, a congressman from Oklahoma, ensured that another $40 million would be in that package. And that funding announcement just came out this week. So it's frustrating. The second package has, I think, $164 million for Indian Health Service for the acquisition of personal protective equipment, for facilities to help the tribes build and prepare for this disease. But this last one is really quite substantial. And we are just fighting for it tirelessly. Everybody's working together to make sure that the tribes are not forgotten. In New Mexico, you know, Congresswoman Holland has been just incredible. She's just a warrior who we are so grateful for. I was on a call with her office with representatives from the Pueblos over the weekend to ensure that the Pueblos would have access to that CDC funding. Senator Udall, of course, he's just keeps going back and calling back and reminding people about the tribes. So you have really strong members of Congress there.
Any resources that you can recommend for tribes if they are not familiar and where to go for COVID-19 information specific for tribal nations? Who do they reach out to? Where do they go?
Well, I hope they will reach out to, and I invite them to reach out to the National Indian Health Board. This organization belongs to the tribes. And on Monday, we are launching a COVID-19 Tribal Resource Center on our website, www.nihb.org. And that will also include a blog with American Indian Alaska Native physicians from the front lines. So we'll have a great many resources specific to the tribes. And, you know, just keep checking back with us and we're happy to serve you.
Thank you, Stacy Bolin with the National Indian Health Board.
To find out more about the government response, we're now talking to Cabinet Secretary of Office of Indian Affairs, Lynn Trujillo. Secretary Trujillo, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate the time today.
Let me ask you, how are you and your family doing? Are you all doing well?
We are. Thank you for asking. I'm actually in Santa Fe. I'm not at the Pueblo, so I try to call and see how they're doing. Mostly my family is calling me and making sure that I'm taking care of myself during this time. And So I really, everyone's doing well. Thank you.
Good. That's good to hear. Now, can you tell me how hard are the Native communities being hit by the virus in the state?
Well, I mean, as you know, many of our tribal communities have already been facing some issues such as food and water insecurity. And so in response to COVID, I think that unfortunately, some of these issues are exacerbated and stressed. You know, we're hearing about a lot of needs from our communities for water and food, but as well as concerns about getting tested and getting our healthcare and first responders with PPE in the communities. And then also just information. You know, there's fear about the unknown. And so a lot of questions about just COVID itself, how to protect themselves in our communities, how to protect our elders, making sure that they're provided for, but also safe.
What is the state doing to address these issues? Are the state preparing to give PPEs to the tribal communities? Are they preparing? How are they getting the message out? How are they communicating with everyone to let them know of what's to happen next?
So, I mean, a lot of our efforts, I mean, this administration is incredible. Indian Affairs Department has been in touch with our tribal leaders and communities. I'm in constant contact with our tribal leaders. We have staff assigned as key points with different particular tribal communities to be responsive to COVID. We know that our state is doing as much as it can to put out information about testing sites, as well as ensuring that there are resources. And what we've been doing is trying to connect our tribal communities with the resources here in the state, either through the governor's office or working in conjunction with our sister agencies. So a lot of these efforts take place in other departments, and we have incredible partnerships. And I'll just give you one example, food to our children. As you know, our schools are closed to make sure that there isn't a spread of COVID. And Indian Affairs is working with the governor's office, with our early childhood and care department, PED, our partners at CYFD. So it's really taking all of us coming together to make sure that we're connecting those tribal communities with these resources. And the response has been incredible. Another effort where we've seen some concern, and the state has really stepped up, is there's concerns about increased traffic during this time in some of our tribal communities. And New Mexico DOT has partnered to send out messages and press releases encouraging folks to stay home, that many of our tribal communities are not open to the public. They're doing their best to protect their own community residents and asking their cooperation to do that.
Now, I've been talking to a few tribal leaders today, and they said one of the problems they have outside of outsiders coming in, continuing to come in, or the people who live on in pueblos and on native lands, not necessarily adhering to the social distancing recommendations. What do you say to that?
You know, I think our tribal leaders, I want to thank them for their guidance and their partnership. I know that they have their challenges. And really, you know, how do you balance between protecting your community, but then also where people need to go to work? We're working with a number of Pueblo communities to talk with them about what would it look like and how can the state be a partner in helping to restrict access? How can we bring resources to your communities? Because maybe that's part of why people are leaving the reservation. As you know, some of our remote reservations, people have to travel to get food, water, fuel. And so if we can bring that more closer to home, maybe we can alleviate some of that traffic and transportation in and out of the communities. But, you know, we've offered our partnership, whatever we can do to help our tribal leaders ensure that their communities are safe.
Now, what hurdles are you facing in helping tribes to set up really effective response systems?
Well, I think that, you know, part of the challenge is we've never been through something like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, how is it that we respond? I mean, we're basically responding in the moment. And it's always nice to say, I wish we had these plans put forward, but it's really, I think that's part of the challenge. And I think what we're trying to do to get beyond some of these challenges with our tribal communities is working with them directly. And so, you know, what do we do if there is a positive COVID case in your community, tribal leader? What does that particular strategy look like for you and your community? And really, you know, tailoring it to the uniqueness of those tribal communities. But I think that part of it is like none of us have been through this before. And I think we're all trying to do our best to problem solve. And I think that's one thing that I've have to say in terms of my colleagues with the state is I'm really trying to be problem solvers and address the needs.
Given that no one in the world has been through this situation before. The entire globe is suffering and living through this. Now, it's bringing up a lot of issues across the world in many societies that people are that have been long held issues, but not necessarily having been addressed. And we understand that Native lands have been underserved as far as having the basic facilities that you mentioned at the top of this interview. With you and your colleagues in the state, are you not only working to create solutions now, but are you leaving avenues and opportunities to have conversations to really finally address these issues after we make it through this pandemic?
Yes, I think we are. And I'll give you an example. I think just some of the efforts that we're doing around water and planning, I think that those will have lasting effects. I also think another area where we know that there has been a gap in terms of e-connectivity on our tribal reservations, but now there's the opportunity to be able to address that and to build out. And I think there's incredible opportunity, even with this funding, the federal funding that's coming in, for us to address infrastructure and put into place some long-term plans to address some of the issues that we're dealing with in the immediate right now.
Okay. Now, final question for you. A few days ago, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, who appointed you, on a phone call to President Trump, she said she feared that the virus could wipe out entire tribes. And that comment and statement, while some people understand where she was coming from, other people were rather, they were made to be upset about that, considering the history of viruses, pathogens, and sickness being spread to the Native community as European colonizers arrived in North America. Did you hear about that? And tell me, what did you think of what she said?
So I did hear about it from a couple of folks. You know, I wasn't on that call that she had with the president. I think that our governor deeply cares about all the citizens in New Mexico, but she deeply cares about our tribal communities. And as you know, she has a special place in her heart for our elders when she was Secretary of Aging and Long-Term Services. And I think that maybe that's where her comments were coming from, and just the urgency in getting the federal government to act and to get those resources. You know, I appreciate the efforts that are happening on the federal level, but it's not soon enough. And we need those resources to get out into our tribal communities here in New Mexico, but across the nation and in a way that is immediately accessible, because our tribal nations are on the forefront of addressing COVID right now. And every moment that goes by, I worry about the impacts that it has to our tribal communities.
Yes.
And so I appreciate and understand her sense of urgency to get some action from the federal government.
I understand. Now, how can our listeners help your efforts?
Staying home.
Yes.
Creating, social distancing, taking care of themselves, checking in on their loved ones, their families, their elders, you know, I think really practicing that, it is serious and we want to do all that we can. I think that there's an opportunity, and I've been really overwhelmed by the outpour of foundations contacting our department, other folks just saying, what can we do to help? And so we have a lot of needs that are needed in our communities. So whatever anyone can do to support businesses in whatever way possible, volunteering. We know that there is a need for volunteers. So Aging and Long-Term Services is working with Indian Affairs to get food out to our elders in tribal communities. And the food banks have done an incredible job to step up, but they need volunteers.
Okay.
And they need to go in and help to get that out there. We need volunteers with those efforts. And I think that there's a lot of efforts where people can give if they can.
Yeah.
But I think most, first and foremost, I think that your listeners can be good to each other, kind during this time, and really come together, you know, and help each other out.
Yeah, that's what we all need to do. Wise words. I want to thank you very much for being with me. She's Lynn Trujillo, Cabinet Secretary for the Office of Indian Affairs. Thank you for your efforts and your work, and stay healthy, okay?
Thank you. You too.
We've been talking about the issues that tribal leaders are facing as we all deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. My next guest is Chile Yazzie, president of the Shiprock chapter of the Navajo Nation. Chile, thank you so much for being on the show. How are you doing today?
Glad to be here.
So tell me, how is everything for you and your family?
Family-wise, we're well. We're staying at home and making sure that any family member that goes out strictly observes the hygiene recommendations that are made so that we don't contaminate anybody in the family. So we're well.
Excellent. That's really good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. Now tell me, what are things like in the Shiprock area?
There's quite a bit of confusion, a lot of concern, but we're dealing with the situation the best that we can. The Navajo Nation has a health command center that basically is headquartering all of the relief efforts that are going on across the nation. And here locally, we are working pretty well with them. So we are meeting the needs, at least at this point in time.
Do you feel like you're getting enough support from the New Mexico state government?
I think we are getting enough government support from both. We have our own grassroots Northern Diné COVID-19 relief effort here in the Shiprock area, which is a branch off of the Navajo Hopi COVID-19 relief effort.
Okay.
So in terms of being a grassroots effort, not officially government, the Navajo Nation's Command Center has basically given us autonomy and political support to do what we need to do. In terms of resources, some of that is trickling down, like food for our elders and families in need that are in isolation. Some of that food did come from the state of New Mexico, specifically through the Indian Affairs Department. And our own local leadership, which includes Representative Allison, have been very supportive of our community efforts. So we're doing as well as we can for now.
Yes, I think a lot of people are trying to do as well as we can, despite these uncertain times. Now, let me ask you a question. I know that people are asking folks who are not on tribal lands to not go to them. Does that interfere with getting supplies?
I don't think so. You know, there's been talk about doing a total lockdown, but obviously that's untenable. Just looking at the limitation of law enforcement personnel. We have, but traffic is going in and out like usual. And I think that some of it is to our overall detriment in terms of there are people who are just totally ignoring the recommendations to stay home and are just going about like there's nothing wrong. And I think that is not good, not working in our favor.
That works in no one's favor. So they're completely ignoring the social distancing guidelines.
Yes, that's the case. But I think that as the virus comes closer and closer to our communities, and as people know that there are people we know who are becoming infected, those recommendations are taken more seriously. And I think the disregard for those recommendations is declining. So
okay.
I think people are coming aboard.
They're becoming a little bit more aware. I want to ask you a little bit more about communication, because with poor service or net service, are people able to keep in touch with their relatives who are not on tribal lands? You know, how are you all sending and receiving information that people need? Does this create problems in an urgent situation like this? Is it hard to get the word out to everyone?
I don't think that communication has been impacted in that way. Hmm. In terms of communicating with relatives and other folks off the reservation. One thing it has done because of the shelter and home orders, those of us that are service providers that are in government have had to resort to the conference calls option. And I've been involved with two, sometimes three, very lengthy conference calls per day.
Okay.
So it's very time consuming, but it's proving to be effective.
Now, let me ask you this. Let me pivot a little bit. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham said a few days ago on a phone call to President Trump that the virus could wipe out entire tribes. And that is a frightening thought. Did you hear about that? And what do you think about what she said?
We saw that report and we had understood that some of that comment was taken out of context, but I haven't seen that. But just on the face of it for right now, absolutely, we are very concerned that she would say that if she did, in fact, say that. Mm. And that's just not called for. We will be making official statements that would alert the governor and whomever of our concern for those kinds of comments.
Have you all reached out to her office at all?
Not directly. We are prepared here from Shiprock, at least from my office, to state the concern. But we've been advised that there will be information coming from our central government that would clarify those comments. But like I said, I haven't seen that. And I will say something about this, at least from my own standpoint. So it's not going to go unresponded to.
Okay. Okay. We'll be looking forward to seeing your statement. Now, tell me, what good resilient ideas are people having? Are you seeing smart ways that people are finding their way through this? Has there been any innovation in how people are living?
Well, I think there's been a real surge in terms of volunteerism. People are just absolutely concerned, but you know, the prohibitive there obviously is having to go out in public and meeting and serving the people who need help. The volunteerism spirit is very much alive, and I think that it's really been, the pandemic has really catalyzed that spirit.
Yeah.
As you know, as Native peoples, certainly also, we take the pandemic and issues involved therein and look at them from our indigenous viewpoints. So there are certainly perceptions that that the general American public are not aware of. We have our own medicines, our own ways of treating with physical illnesses, and some of that is certainly happening, yes.
Now, lastly, you mentioned help. Is there any way for folks to help by making donations at a distance? What kind of thing? How can our listeners help?
We do have our Facebook page, the Northern Diné, that's D-I-N-E, COVID-19 relief effort. And being a grassroots effort, we certainly are very welcoming to any people with good hearts out there who want to support our effort. So absolutely, we are available to receive those donations.
Well, we make sure that we get the word out and that so that help is coming to you. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. He's Chili Yazzy, Shiprock Chapter President. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my brother.
To find out more what's happening in the Native community, I'm speaking now with Brad Charles. He's a musician, a festival organizer, community organizer, and a member of the Navajo Nation. Brad, thanks for being with me today.
Thank you, too.
So let me ask you, how is everything for you and your family?
Right now, we're pretty self-quarantined. Last time we went out anywhere was, I believe, last Wednesday.
Okay.
And ever since then, we've just been inside, taking care of each other, taking all the precautionary measures, you know.
Yes, that's good to hear. Now tell me, what's the current status of things in Shiprock area?
Right now, it's getting pretty bad. It's the first, so a lot of the elders, they get their checks now. So we're kind of worried right now that there's going to be an increase of the cases that are going to start happening because they're out there, they're misinformed or they're not informed at all.
Oh, wow. That's the problem. So are there any new healthcare options for people out there where you are? Anybody coming up with methods to reach people?
Besides the IHS and everything like that, I believe the National Guard had put out a set up some field camps or like field hospitals and relief in Tuba City, Arizona, and in Chinle, Arizona. The only problem is they only set up the camps, but they didn't bring no medical professionals at all.
So there's no medical professionals. I'm sure there's probably a lack of supply. They just have the camps there. What do they expect people to do?
I have no idea. That's what nobody knows.
We're going to have to dig deeper into that. Now, what about the people who are continuing to move about? Earlier this morning, I had a conversation with Chili Yazzy, president of the Shiprock chapter of the Navajo Nation, and he mentioned that there are people who are not adhering to the stay-at-home guidelines. Are you seeing this?
Yes, I am every day and kind of had to witness it all the time. And I think people don't get that. They think that they're okay in their communities if they don't leave, but they don't understand that there's other people from the communities that go out into Shiprock or to Farmington or to the border towns, and they might be exposed to somebody that doesn't know they have it. They bring it back, and then that's kind of how it's spreading.
So what are people doing to get folks to adhere to the guidelines?
Well, they've been having checkpoints every night. We had a curfew now, which we've never had, and it started on Monday, and the curfew runs from 8 p.m. to 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
But thing is, during the daytime, a lot of people are out and about, and families are gathered, and like they still go to the laundromat, like as a whole family. They still go to the grocery store as a whole family, and I think that's where it's spreading a lot from that.
So That comes to communication, and we understand that communication lines are limited.
Especially out here, a lot of the elders, they only can speak in Navajo, and a lot of the younger generation don't really know how to interpret correctly for them. And then I'm seeing also that a lot of the medical staff don't really know how to speak Navajo also, and that's why they're caring more for the people that do speak English and not more for the people that don't know how to speak English at all.
So that's leaving a whole set of people, probably the most vulnerable, at risk because there's no ability to translate directives or needs or even to translate symptoms or how they're feeling.
Yeah, correct.
This is a big problem. Now, have tribal leaders done anything to try to fix this?
I feel like their hands are tied up with everything. They're trying to get everything situated. They're trying to seem like they're trying to get the communities on the reservation to stay put, but nobody is listening. And I think that's the problem. And they're all probably having a problem with that also.
So what do you think is a way to get people to listen? What will people pay attention to so they can, you know, live by the guidelines?
I don't know. It's sad to say, but, you know, we have to. For things to get better, things have to get bad. And I think for some of these people to realize that this is happening, they're going to have to experience death in their own family to realize that it's here.
Or something close to them. And that's what's interesting, because it's obviously not only in the Native community, but across the country and the world. We're seeing large groups of people who are absolutely ignoring the guidelines that are being brought out by scientists and their own governments. I'm wondering, what can happen outside of a more punitive type of lockdown, to where if you're seen out, you're brought in behind bars, which is a whole nother problem. You know, as many places across the country are releasing prisoners because they don't want to have too many people in jails. This is a catch-22 if there ever was one. Let me ask you another question. A couple days ago, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, she said in a phone call to President Trump that the virus could wipe out entire tribes. That's a frightening thought. Also, understanding the history of European viruses and illnesses coming through and the carnage that they wreaked and wreaked upon the Native American community here. Did you hear about that?
I was pretty upset about it, but I believe she was telling him so they can actually help us. You know, like she's telling him this would happen if you're the government doesn't help us. But it seems to me like Trump don't really care because he took a tribe's entire reservation away because they didn't want to adhere to his gambling kind of standards. So we kind of think a lot of this might be backlash too, you know, like against Native Americans for maybe us standing up at Standing Rock and like putting those kind of things out there for people to know about. And I don't know, maybe this is what's happening also. Or maybe that's why we're not getting enough funding for us to help.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Now I'm thinking about the comments that the governor made, and obviously it opens up very deep generational wounds. And this may be something to work on in the future, or the conversation to have in the future.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, like a smallpox kind of ruined our whole thing. And then the Navajo people, we were sent on a long walk by the government again, you know, and then the Spanish flu came to our res, almost wiped us out. But how we're trying to tell people is stay home. You know, we've endured a lot. We can't fight this right now. We can't like combat it in hand. Mm-hmm. So we just need to stay home. That's the only way we can fight this.
Yeah, that is the best way to fight it. Now, are you seeing signs of resilience?
A lot of the youth are starting to garden. A lot of the youth are starting to speak up more. And that gives me hope.
Okay. Well, we're going to stay upon this. One more thing. How can our listeners help?
I believe on the Navajo Nation website, there is a GoFundMe that's not also just helping the Navajo Nation. It's also helping the Hopi Nation, which is also right in the middle of our reservation. I don't really know the website, but you can go to the Navajo Nation government website, and I believe they have a lot of information on their website.
We will direct people there. He is Brad Charles, a promoter, musician, community organizer. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for informing us about what's happening.
Awesome. Thank you, too.
Yes, sir. Be well. Stay healthy.
You, too.
Special thanks to all of our guests and to Antonia Gonzalez and New Mexico PBS for contributing to the show. We'll have links to all of the reporting we talked about on today's episode online at KUNM.org. Time to check out the resources we heard about today. And if you want to tell us about other great community-led resources, shoot us an email at yournmgov@gmail.com. We'll be sure to share them. The National Indian Health Board launched its COVID-19 Resource Center for Tribes. You can find that at nihb.org. Check out the Navajo Nation website to see how you can help. That's navajo-nsn.gov. Look at the Notabegay III Foundation at nb3foundation.org. On Facebook, look up the Northern Dine COVID-19 Relief Effort. Find a full list of all the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to help or donate online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. And how are things going for you? We want to hear about it. Call us up 505-218-7084 and we'll play your messages on our show. Or you can email us at, you know it by now, yournmgov@gmail.com. Tomorrow's show, hospital readiness. If you watch the national news, you're aware that states like New York, Louisiana, Michigan, and others who are in desperate need of help and supplies in their hospitals. This begs the question, how prepared are the hospitals in New Mexico? Tune in tomorrow at 8 p.m. as I talk with the people who can give us the answer. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. We're very, very grateful for the contributions of New Mexico PBS and Antonio Gonzalez. Super awesome shout out to Taylor Velasquez for the editing help today. Hannah Colton as well. Theme music by Pope. Yes, yes, y'all. You can hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 8 p.m. Online, find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation and the New Mexico Local News Fund. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil A. Colonna. Thanks for listening.